ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Presented by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
It's time to take a drive past Jeremy Branham's house on Bad Take
Boulevard. What is that about,
by the
way? Why do you gotta start and scuffle so much? You should be above that, unlike others. Why do you always gotta get into these Twitter beefs?
Troll so hard, baby. Troll so hard.
Yeah, you do. Why? You're good enough. You don't have to do that.
Oh, it's not about good enough. It's just about I enjoy it. I like being a troll sometimes.
Well, Jeremy does too.
So he
you
does.
You guys are perfect.
That's why we get along so well. We both poke the bear all the time.
I'm tired of being the bear.
Let's allow him to talk now. Not that he was ever really not allowed. Only the Twitchers thought he was allowed to talk. But
no, King of Twitch is fine. He's just giving me a hard time.
Turn the microphone over to the master of ceremonies, Mr. Joe George.
All right, so we're going to start with one that, I mean, I guess by next week, this could be flipped. It could be on Bad Take Boulevard that I'm putting it on Bad Take Boulevard. But the Nerd Index, as I will call it, the ESPN Analytics.
Nerds!
Gave the Miami Heat a 3% chance before the series started to beat the Boston Celtics. Yeah, that's a tough look for your...
Wait, 3%.
Their
based
analytics...
Based on what?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it wasn't just on how they've been playing. They were the hot team.
The ESPN Analytics is what their tweet said, that the Miami Heat have a 3% chance to beat the Boston Celtics in the conference finals.
Do we know if that was real analytics or was that analytics?
It's whatever ESPN tweeted.
That's a bad look. Because, I mean, Schefter's one thing about changing his credibility by doing what he did at the draft a year ago. This is something totally different. Because they're constantly forcing this at you. They're constantly forcing the ESPN analytics and the ESPN numbers and all those other things. 3% for a team that was that hot? Man, that's a bad look.
It's one of those things, like, they just make up their own stats. Like, they have their own version of, QBR?
Yeah.
Like there's like their own version of it or whatever
it
is.
Yeah, that's a horse turd stat.
Yeah, it's like it's just their own made up thing that really only they use and some stuff they've had to get rid of because it's been so bad. However they got this, like it's a joke.
I get Miami was 6 games over 500 in the regular season and Boston was 57 wins, right? But to say they only had a 3% chance to win a series. I mean, look, they should have a 25 to 30% chance to win the series just because, look.
Jimmy Butler and a healthy Kyle Lowry.
Like, well, you play some of the games at home. Like, I'm surprised to see Boston. Someone just put Heat plus 7.5. I think it opened at Celtics minus 8.5.
Vincent's not playing tonight.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So maybe that changed the line a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think Boston wins at home tonight.
Yeah,
I mean, don't think they win the series, but I think they're going to make it more interesting by winning tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not like before the series. Like Junior Bronco just said, imagine taking the Heat to win it before the playoffs, win it all, or even get to the finals. Totally valid point. But the way they're playing, they got to the conference finals, so then spit out some number that said they had a 3% chance. Like your whole organization belongs on Bad Take Boulevard.
I feel like they took regular season numbers and tried to apply it to a postseason series without including everything that had gone on in the postseason.
But if you're using not just analytics, but if you're just looking at it from a gambling perspective alone, 3% with a team that did what they did just to get to this point, I think that's not even just a huge undersell. I think that's a misstep. That's terrible.
Yeah. Another one we got here. This is just from the Old Takes Exposed Twitter account. This poll went up by, I think this guy is a 76ers writer, so he put it out to his listeners.
Is that the same guy that I called out?
No, I think it's someone else.
Okay.
He just put this Twitter poll up, and this was, 2019. If the Sixers could only keep one player moving forward, who would you rather them keep? Option A was Jimmy Butler. Option B was Tobias Harris.
Ooh. Boy.
Listen, 76ers fans, 91% of them voted for Tobias Harris.
Earned it.
Philly fans.
I mean, How at any point you would have that take blows my mind, but it'd be that many people would take Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler. Have you ever watched basketball?
Earned it.
Think about it. I've said this numerous times. When you think about what that roster was for just the second half of a season alone, when you could put Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, J.J. Redick, that team was loaded and could not do anything. I think Ben Simmons might have been on that squad as well.
Yeah.
Not that he's a great player, but
I can't remember if that started like the... I think he played.
He was on the squad, I believe, because that was part of the process you were supposed to trust.
I'm telling you,
that Sixers team was loaded.
Was that the series when he went like, he had a clear lane to the hoop? And
no,
instead
that was
of,
after that.
And he passed it?
Yeah, that was Atlanta, I think. He passed up an easy layup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons, maybe one of the most... Like, about, wild turns of a career.
How about their draft picks, though? Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz. Markelle Fultz, who forgot how to shoot once he got to the league. That's a band. They gave up Jason Tatum in the process and a future one.
Yeah, they did.
To get Markelle Fultz. Ooh,
process.
Boy.
Yeah, I mean...
Process of elimination. That's why Sam Hinkie doesn't have a job.
He eliminated himself.
That's right.
I would say that the process failed.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, they executed it correctly.
They got the Embiid part of it right. So as part of the process, they got their franchise player and an MVP. But they misstepped on Fultz. They misstepped on Ben Simmons. They made too many swings and misses with high picks.
Even Ben Simmons, you know, he was an all-defensive player, multi-time all-star. And part of it's like you don't win the lottery. You get the third pick when they drafted Jahlil Okafor out of Duke.
But the
big miss is that they had the pick to take Jason Tatum, and then they traded back with
Danny
with
Ainge
Boston.
Played them like a fiddle.
Oh, I mean,
let me give you a little fun with numbers from that 2019 poll coming off that season, because the Sixers acquired Tobias Harris at the deadline. He played 27 games for them that year. He shot 32.5% from three. He's a 37% career shooter. Shot 32.5% from three and averaged 18 points a game. Jimmy Butler, who, you know, they got early in that season because, remember, he had the practice in Minnesota where he took four scrubs and kicked the snot out of the other four starters.
He's not a fan of Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, he shot 34% from three and averaged 18 points per game.
Wasn't that roster deeper than just Butler, Redick, Tobias, Embiid, Simmons? They had a couple other vets, I want to say, like a point guard or someone. That team had some talent.
I feel like J.J. Redick was probably still
I said
on that
Redick team. Was okay, on that team. I mentioned him earlier.
So that team was Jimmy Butler, Corey Brewer, Wilson Chandler, Robert Covington.
When Covington could play.
Yeah. Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Markelle Fultz, who else on that team? Shake Milton, J.J. Redick, Dario Saric, Mike Scott, Ben Simmons. Like,
it's a pretty good roster.
They had a good roster.
And last thing I got here for this one, now that the news is officially official between the Oakland A's and the city of Las Vegas, I've been saving this tweet for a while because John Gruden, Scumbag City, in an interview with the local media when he found out the Raiders were leaving Oakland, he said, quote, "It's kind of sad. What will they have once we go?" The Oakland A's official Twitter account said, "Oakland will have the Athletics, the club with the third most championships in Major League Baseball." Yeah, you don't have them anymore.
Not anymore. Now, the dilemma that they're facing now that it's official is, as much as we know and complain about and have to accept how hot it is in the summer, while they're constructing the new ballpark in Las Vegas to be the home of the A's, they're going to need a place to play for a year or two. They're going to play in one of the considerations is to play in their minor league. Was it the 88ers? It's an open-air stadium in which day and night it is going to be about a hundo. That's going to be brutal.
You want to talk about a launching pad?
That too. But just think about how freaking hot it's going to be for all the teams rolling into Vegas, especially if they're a little hungover.
I wonder if they would do something creative. Like maybe take this as the opportunity to try to, you know, that fake thing that, or the thing that almost happened, but then COVID kind of stopped it, was where Tampa was going to play 50% of their games.
In Montreal.
Baseball squashed that. They won't allow
They
it.
Squashed it, but I wonder if you could take this as an opportunity to kind of retest that market.
But it's a double-edged sword, Joe, because I agree with you. You could move them to a different market for a year or two.
Yeah, put Oakland and Montreal.
But then you disconnect with the fan base that is clamoring for that team, and for 2 years, they can't really see them and be...
Yes, but look how well it worked in Oklahoma City. Like, it was only a season, but... You know, when they put the Pelicans or whatever they were at the time, the Hornets, in Oklahoma City for a year because of, was that Katrina? That when they played there for a year, that led to saying, okay, Oklahoma City is a viable market for an NBA franchise. They could kind of do that now. They could put the A's in Montreal for a season or two, kind of reinvigorate that fan base, see what the turnout looks like. And you kind of call them out. You say, if you want a Major League Baseball team, you got to show up to these games.
But see, I don't think you can afford to play 50% of the games in Vegas.
No, I'm saying they do 100% of the games in Montreal.
But my point is, though, if you're trying to invigorate a new fan base in Vegas to jump on the A's bandwagon, you're going to say, but you got to watch them play in another city for 2 years. It's not going to be the same kind of hype train and merchandise and like
for
excitement.
Sure. But you know they're coming eventually.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Here's the problem. Where are they going to play?
Well, where was Tampa? See, that's what I never understood
about
Tampa.
Where are they going to play?
I mean, were they going to play at the Big O? I mean, was the thing even still there?
Well, that's what Tampa Bay, like when Tampa Bay said they were going to play half their games in Montreal, that was like the only logical explanations. They were going to go back to the old ballpark.
Olympic Stadium hasn't held a baseball game since 2014.
I know. Man. That's why I never understood that story when it was coming
out.
Now,
did you hear the story that just came out today, too, that they said that Joe, you and I were just talking about this, a more modern field in Milwaukee is now being scrutinized by Major League Baseball, and they're being told, you got to upgrade the facilities around here, because that's why the A's left Oakland, because they were playing in a dump and a hellhole. Milwaukee was built, I think, after Minute Maid. It was built with the model of Minute Maid, but I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg. But there's no way that stadium should be run down by yet now.
Miller Park or whatever it's called now is 22 years old.
American Family Field now.
And now they're threatening to
it's ridiculous.
Move them. Like, well, look at Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta's had...
They had two stadiums in the same amount of time.
I think Atlanta's had three stadiums since I've been alive.
Yeah, because they got out of Atlantic Fulton County.
Yeah, the launching pad.
Then
yeah.
They went to the Turner Field was the first new home with Ted Turner's blessing, and now they're in another new stadium. Totally, it's crazy.
So what used to be Miller Park opened in 01. So like what 2 years after after the juice box, we won't use the other word because that's apparently frowned upon. Won't use that word.
Right.
But yeah, I was surprised to see that they're saying that the Brewers complex is substandard. Look, the Coliseum in Oakland is the most dilapidated dump of any stadium in any of the four major sports. You get raw sewage getting pumping up through into the dugout. I mean, it's disgusting. Stuff is leaking in there all the time. Nobody ever wants to pay for anything. Oakland doesn't have a whole lot of money to begin with. They've been needing a new stadium for nearly 15 years.
Blummer always talks about the AstroTurf tabletops in the press box. Like the literal tabletops of the press box are AstroTurf in Oakland.
They've needed a new stadium for at least 15 years. And because Oakland is kind of poor, as a government, they're kind of poor, they don't want to pay any money. And you know what? I'm not against that. I firmly believe that if you're a billionaire and you own a team, build your own damn stadium. Your private financing is going to get done cheaper and faster than anything to do with the government. The only thing you need the government for is get us infrastructure so that I've got water coming in, I've got electricity coming in. That's all you should need from the local government. Every one of these billionaires is looking for a super handout. You give me $1 billion from your hardworking middle-class people because I'm bleeping rich. Every one of those guys can get shot straight to the frickin' sun.
But even if you couldn't afford to keep them in Oakland, if you had good ownership, you'd have kept them in San Francisco. But Oakland fought that tooth and nail, but then with the elections, they couldn't actually get a deal done to keep them. And then now they're pissed they're leaving. You had ample opportunities.
No, but because they've wanted just more money than Oakland could ever give them. And the option was always, you know, they went from having what the downtown thing to then they wanted to be like in that like on the water.
Yeah, like the Warriors.
The terminal, Howard Terminal. And I guess there's all kinds of different environmental issues with.
Well, the problem is you already got the Giants in San Francisco, so it's a more difficult move.
And but I mean, you could move it to San Jose.
Yeah.
There's other things.
See the Niners.
They never wanted that. They wanted Vegas. Vegas for baseball is what L.A. was to the NFL for 30 years.
What's the opposite of the – what are they going to have to do instead of a humidor to try to keep the balls from flying out of Vegas?
Yeah, put a damn roof on the stadium.
They said they're not going
to. Yeah, they
have to.
They have to. You can't be playing 114 degrees in the middle of July. Guys are going to draw. Guys are going
to
dunk.
Yeah, there's no option like that. You have to put a roof on it. And walls, Seattle. This ain't Seattle. You're going to have to air conditioning the hell out of that.
All right, we've seen a common response to this being, let's just put flags on them. Maybe we should investigate what this rule is. Next.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we have a little bit shorter segment here, so I'm going to hold over the NFL rules thing to the next segment because I want to have a full segment to discuss that with you. So let me ask, this is something that got brought up on my show yesterday that guys are asking me to ask you guys. I thought this was a very easy decision, but interested to hear what you have to say.
Okay.
Would you rather James Harden on the Rockets or J.D. Clowney on the Texans?
Well, I think that Clowney's the easy answer for me because you know how adamant I am about Harden being the wrong fit and because of the finances. I think if Harden wants 4 years at $50 million a year, and you're $200 million on the books, not to mention he's not the same player and what he's going to do to the young squad, as opposed to D'Amico's not going to let Clowney run roughshod. I got to imagine it's going to be a shorter-term deal for a lot less money than the Harden deal. And I believe that, not that he's going to be extremely effective, but if anybody's going to get whatever's left out of J.D. Clowney, it could be D'Amico. I don't want either guy, but if I got to choose, this is a lot easier one than the ones Branham normally throws at me, which are mind-numbingly painful. I'll say Clowney.
See, I thought this was a no-brainer. James Harden wants a max deal. Clowney's coming here for 1 year at what? $4 million? I mean, there is no market for J.D. Clowney.
Yeah, I don't think it could be a lot more than that.
And you know what?
You can cut him.
That's it. If J.D. Look, J.D.'s best position, despite the fact everybody wants to line him up on the edge, J.D.'s always been more effective in the middle than he has been on the edge. Always. He is a terrific penetrator of the line. He is great at getting in the backfield, stopping the run. He's never been a great, great pass rusher. Right? He'll get a handful of sacks, six sacks, eight sacks, nine sacks, but he's never been a big-time edge rusher. What he has been is a guy who darts through holes and stops runs. And much more effective there. You can bring in J.D. Clowney for 1 year on a low salary and say, look, you're going to play in the middle of the defensive line where we need the most help. Go wreck people's worlds. Go be disruptive. And if you can't do that, adios, muchacho. That was not a hard decision.
I think maybe I see Willie bringing up this name too, a guy we talked about earlier. What if the question is Patrick Beverley for the Rockets or Clowney for the Texans? Because I feel like those are two are more comparable in what their contracts are going to be and everything.
For me, it's still Clowney because I think he's still got enough to give the team something in terms of effectiveness and some results. I don't think Pat Beverley has a whole lot left in the tank. I don't think he's nearly as quick or as good defensively as he once was when he self-anointed him the best defender in the league. I think that the attitude and the shtick has surpassed what he brings to the table for any team that he signs for, and I don't think it's the right fit. I think Clowney, to Pat's point, you put him along with Sheldon Rankins on the defensive line, and I think that you're going to see some results, and I think that you're going to give D'Amico some weapons he can do some things with. That's why I think that either one of them, to me, the answer is Clowney.
I think if, you know, you're talking about Clowney being a one-year deal, I think Clowney understands the moment where he is. He's no longer a highly desired player. He's no longer a guy with a ton of upside. He is essentially in the bounce around the league and try to get a job stage of his career.
So you think he's to the point where he accepts a one-year deal?
I think he's taken a one. He just took a one-year deal.
But at that low of a price.
I think there's a market for him. He's still on the market because nobody wants to pay him.
I think he likes the fact that he doesn't have to go try a new city and get a new, you know, a place to live and get used to all those things. He lives here. He loves it here. He said as much. And that just makes it a whole lot easier for him to take a little less here. It's just, it all comes down, if DeMeco thinks he can do something with him and maybe get something more out of him, that's what, to me, that's the deciding factor.
And you know what? If DeMeco can't get out of him, then nobody's going to get out of him. And his career is going to be over. I think he understands that. I think part of it is, hey, you know, he needs to play for a coach that is going to maximize. There's what, maybe six of them around the league that are 100% you feel confident that guy's going to get the most out
of
Jaden
Clowney. But isn't it fair to, I don't know if this is fair or not, but I think that it already is time for him to move on. There's no market for JD Clowney. I don't think that there should be, because I think that JD Clowney's been all about himself for the last couple of years, and no matter where he signs forever, however much money he signs for, he finds a way to sit out a lot more than he plays and just collect the check and continue to get wealthier and wealthier while he gives the team that signed him, that committed those dollars to him, little to nothing in return. And this will just be another one of those where, hey, guess what? I can say I'm hurt again, or I can get hurt. I cannot play, but at least I'm sitting at home in my own bed, in my own spot, with my own people around me to say, got another year out of somebody.
See, and that's where I think like Patrick Beverley and Clowney, like their situations are so similar because it's the exact same thing. Lives here. Like, for the most part, like still has a house here, would be
Does
pretty
Pat
much...
Pat Beverly? I thought he moved to L.A.
I think Pat still has a house here. I don't know if he lives here, but I know he's... I believe he still comes out here pretty often, not as much as Clowney.
He might have a spot for his mom here.
I think one of the things with Pat Bev is he could be a minor trade chip at, like, a bare minimum. Like, he was part of a deal last year that helped the Lakers move some pieces in a four-team deal that sent him to the Magic before they bought him out.
Yeah, because he's salary filler.
So, like, at least Pat Bev, like, in the NBA versus the NFL, if you sign him, he can be, you know, defense comes first. You know, he can preach what Udoka is preaching himself. And then if it doesn't work out, at least you could try to use him and get some kind of asset in return. When in reality, like, Clowney, like, when it doesn't work, all you're doing is cutting him.
See, I feel like with Clowney, you're going to know before you break camp what you're going to get from him. I think they would work him hard in training camp. They'd make him prove, hey, you're committed. Well, you're ready to go.
Well, you already said enough. If they're going to work him hard, he's out.
Well, you know what? Then I dump you, and I don't owe you any money because your contract's not guaranteed.
Yeah, I don't think he's signing up for that. Or I don't think he lasts through training camp. I just think that that's who he's always been. He doesn't like to practice. He doesn't like to work hard. He literally made a boat ton of money off of one play against against Michigan when he was at South Carolina.
It blew Robinson's helmet off.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, we didn't see a whole lot of results or return on investment from anything Jadeveon Clowney for his whole career.
You know what? Like I said, if you're talking about a one-year deal for very little money, and it's obviously not going to guarantee until he is on the roster for week one, then sure, I'll bring you in. We'll give you a look, but you don't make.
Yeah,
the team.
I'm fine.
You're
if
out.
I'm fine if he doesn't get any offers right before camp, and you bring him in and you do a prove it deal to see what he can do. But I'm not going to go out right now and try and make a deal with him to try and sign him or give him anything guaranteed.
Oh,
I don't
no
think
guaranteed
he
money.
It.
Absolutely not. You don't need.
Didn't
to
Jeremy
that
say
money.
That he's never had a year where he's had double digit sacks?
He hasn't. He's had nine and a half.
Yeah, well,
but he's never had double-digit sacks. Like I said, he's
there's nothing to say that to expect that he's going to come close to it this year.
No, and like I said, I don't think that's where you're using him. He's better in the middle of the line than he is on the edge.
He's also not good when he plays. If you want him to play where he doesn't want to play, so if he doesn't want to play in the middle, then you got another problem.
Yeah, well, that's conversation you got to have with him ahead of time. Obviously,
but he thought he was better than Myles Garrett. Numbers don't say that.
He definitely is better than Myles Garrett. At missing games.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I want to miss games and get paid like that. That would be...
That's a Kelvin Cato miss.
That'd be sweet. All right. This new NFL rule has Andy Reid saying, let's just put flags on them. Get into it. Maybe some other rules that maybe the league should be taking a look at. Next.
You- You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Here's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. So the NFL has a new kickoff rule, which I'm sure you and Jeremy have talked about.
Yep.
And I'm sure you've mocked other shows talking about
it. Nope, I don't do those things.
And, of course, Andy Reid, not happy with the fact that now you can basically fair catch a kickoff anywhere on the field, and it puts the ball 25-yard line. Andy said, where does it stop, right? You don't want to take too many pieces away or you're playing flag football. Where are you with this new kickoff rule where you can fair catch anywhere inside the 25-yard line and get the ball to 25?
I'm fine with it. I don't think it's going to alter the game in any way, shape, or form. I understand why they're trying to do it because there's been so many different specific concussion, head-type injuries, and other injuries that happens when you get guys going 110 miles an hour at a guy that's trying to field the ball or the blindside blocks and all the things that go with it. It's a little dicey, and I think they probably could have cleaned it up a little bit more about, you know, if you choose to field it inside the 10, I think it's different than, you know, whether you do it in the end zone or you know, it's a more of a pooch kick, and you do it somewhere around in the 20-25 range. But I think for the most part, I don't think it's going to affect the game hardly at all, and I'm fine with it.
When have you ever seen a guy call a fair catch on a kickoff?
That's a good point. In the end zone. And now they don't even have to.
No, they just let it cross the back of the zone. Right. Once it crosses the goal line,
right.
Even if it comes back out, as soon as it crosses the goal line, touchback.
Yeah, they changed the rule. You don't even have to field it.
So the idea of, oh, I'm going to call a fair catch. I've never seen a guy call a fair catch on a kickoff.
I have when the kickers get cute, some of the special teams coaches and coaches like them to do kind of like the half squib that goes to one corner or the other, and it's kind of way up in the air. And then with the best intentions, normally it's a younger, inexperienced returner starts going, well, I can return this thing, and then realizes I'm going into a really bad situation and might try and put an arm up.
Right, well, you squib it.
I'm saying a pooch kick. Where right. It's up in the air in and around the 10, and they're hoping that with some English it sits. And I think the receiver comes charging up thinking, oh, I can return this, and then realizes, uh-oh, and then tries to throw the quick hand up. That's the only time, to answer your question, it's the only time I've ever seen anything like it.
I mean, I can't even recall having seen that. So I don't think the rule really makes a big difference, to be honest with you. What I would like to see them do is implement the XFL kickoff rule. So the XFL, your kicker kicks it off from your 30. But instead of your guys all lining up and then, you know, hauling ass down the field with the kick, your guys line up at the opponent's 35. They line up at their own 30. Nobody is allowed to move on the kicking team until either the receiver has fielded the ball or the ball has hit the ground and 3 seconds have passed. 90% of their kickoffs get returned.
You know why they're not going to do it?
Because by the XFL.
That's exactly right.
But there's other quirks to that. So, for example, if you kick the ball out of the end zone, the ball comes out to the 35. You have to kick the ball in between the goal line and the 20.
So you can kick it out of the end zone. It's at the 35. But you can kick it into the end zone and there's no penalty.
No, once it goes in the end zone, it's 35. But if you kick it short of the 20 or your kickoff goes out of bounds, it goes to the plus 45.
Nah, I don't like that. That's too much.
It is a huge penalty if you screw it up. And now even if you make that, say, the 40-yard line, you know, the kicking team, the receiving team's 40, I think that's a great way to get kick returns without having those 100-mile-an-hour collisions. Guys aren't getting hurt. I covered a lot of XFL games this year. Guys didn't get hurt. The play was exciting. There were a handful that got taken back for touchdowns. It was definitely an interesting wrinkle and something that I think would inject a little fun into the game. Here's a couple I want to talk to you about, see what you like. In the XFL, in the fourth quarter, if you're down by two scores, you could do a 4th and 15 instead of an onside kick.
I actually see. Here's the thing. I think for leagues like that, I like it a lot. It makes the game more entertaining, exciting, and watchable. What I want to avoid is making the NFL too gimmicky because it's been the same game for too long. It's kind of like with baseball when I think that you've maybe gotten to the point where you've taken it a little too far and worried too much about TV and networks as opposed to the whole tradition of the game. Because I think that when you get too gimmicky with the things you're talking about with football, it takes away what from what people have always had and known and loved about just being NFL football. It's just the greatest players on the planet playing the game at a high level, and we know what the rules have been. I think that as much as I think that's exciting and it would bring more excitement to the game, I don't know that the NFL needs more excitement to the game like that. So that's why I would say it's good for other leagues. I think it's a fun concept for football in general. I don't like it for the NFL.
See, I love the 4th and 15 because onside kicks in the NFL are almost a guaranteed fail.
Oh, for sure.
You know, they're like a 4% conversion rate.
Right.
And it used to be so much higher because when they changed the rules about where, like, you can't leave the line of scrimmage right. until the ball is kicked, when you used to be able to run, you know, 5 or 10 yards, whatever it was, as the kick was happening, there was a chance you could get an onside kick. The only way you're going to get it now is if you kick it at someone and it bounces off their helmet and you get a lucky bounce. It's just it's completely removed that element from the game. And I personally, it is gimmicky, but the idea of like Patrick Mahomes having a 4th and 15 to get one play, and if you don't get it, the other team gets the ball on like the 35 or whatever it is, I think that's great. It would be... Because the way they got rid of the onside kick or the value of it, this is the one rule change. I know the Eagles have put it through. The Ravens have as well in the past. And it's been shot down. It's the one thing that like I would really like to see in the NFL game, actually.
I think it's exciting and it's fun. And it does like Patrick Mahomes, 4th and 15 from his own 20-yard line. Here we go, right? In the XFL, there are no kicking point afters. You have to run a play, and you can get a one-point conversion if you successfully run a play from the 2-yard line, a 2-point conversion if you run it from the 5, or a 3-point conversion if you run it from the 10. What do you think about no kicking point after touchdown, and you can get a 1-, 2-, 3-point conversion being able to run up one single play from the 2, 5, or 10?
I think you avoid ties. For the first thing that comes to my mind is you avoid all the ties of the traditional NFL scoring. But at the same time, again, to me, I go back to exactly what I said about it's too gimmicky. I don't think that the kickers and the extra points, that the way that they've been doing it with either going for two or just kicking it through, as much. I didn't even like it when they started screwing with the extra point. But it made it a little bit more interesting. But I didn't think they had to do that. So I don't think that they have to do what other leagues have to do to kind of draw eyeballs and get attention and make games more exciting. Because I think the games themselves, played by the best players in the world, are exciting enough. But I'm also not going to be like butthurt if they put these rules in place.
I think that's the one where I – like the first time the XFL happened, the NFL did take from them. You know, that's where the Sky Cam came from. Like, there were other rule changes they took in that, like, that it wasn't the XFL had a ton of good ideas. They had, like, one or two good ideas. And I think that's where, like, the line is where, like, the onside kick, 4th and 15, and Big Boss Marshall brings up a good point. I think penalties should not count almost on that play. Like, I hate the idea that you could just throw it up and get pass interference. But, I mean, there's no way to do that. Like, I'm fine with that, but, like, this 1-, 2-, 3-point go for it thing, I don't like that.
I'll say it was,
I don't love it.
It was exciting
it
because
is.
Most teams, like you were about under 50% conversion, even on the single point.
Now what if it's a PI or a defensive holding inside of 15 yards?
I'm fine with it. I just don't do the automatic first if it's within the 15.
But if you're going for it on the one play 15 yards, but the reason why you don't have a chance to get it is because your receiver was held,
yeah, that's...
I think that then you've done what you needed to do and you should be awarded the ball.
Yeah, I mean, like I like the extra point thing. It was fun. It definitely was. Like I watched the little XFL I watched, like the highlights from it, the scores were hard to keep track of a little bit, trying to figure out how they were getting 1, 2, or 3 each time. But it's too gimmicky. I think that's pushing it a little bit, personally.
All right, last one.
You're in favor of all these?
I love them. I love those rules. And this, I'm actually in favor of this too, although I will say it happened very rarely. And if this was allowed in the NFL, I think it would happen very rarely. But when it did happen, there's a chance for a really big play. The Roughnecks actually pulled this off for a touchdown this year. Double forward pass. You could make a second forward pass as long as the first pass that was forward did not pass the line of scrimmage.
I don't like it. I mean, you could still do that in the NFL as long as it's somewhat backwards. I mean, the first pass could be on a straight line or behind the line of scrimmage, but I don't think they have to change that rule either. I just don't think that they have to get that gimmicky. I think that, again, teams are going to find a way to play, have gadget plays in their repertoire that are going to move the football. I don't need it to that level. I'm going to stay consistent with the fact that the NFL's been great for this long. I don't want to mess with it that much. You guys may differ in that. I don't know.
I'm neutral on this one because it's really like all you do is you throw a swing pass right behind the quarterback and you can do the double pass. What does it really matter if you do it on a screen pass? It's such a small, like you're right, Pat, like it's such a small change. This one I'm indifferent to. Like if the NFL, as they're trying to find different ways to, you know, make the game more exciting, and they're looking at what the XFL is doing. This one is such a small, minor change. Like, I don't hate it.
Like, they're already doing it, though, and it doesn't need to have an extra add-on cachet. You can throw it down the line of scrimmage or slightly behind and do the exact same thing. I don't need an extra rule amendment that you can throw it forward a little bit, too.
Well, if you do it, you know, if your quarterback throws a pass behind the line in the NFL, the pass has to be either equal to or behind where the quarterback is.
Yeah.
Here, you know how Patrick Mahomes does that little shovel pass behind the line, but it's a forward pass? Do you imagine he does that little flip pass, guys coming around on the jet sweep, taking that ball, and then toss a little pass over everybody's head because everybody's sold out for the run? That would be a very exciting play.
Exciting, yes, but kind of like to Joe's point, even on with all the things going on in the extra point, I think it would confuse a lot of people, too. And for that reason, too, I'm out.
Well, honestly, that Patrick Mahomes play is like one of my biggest beefs in football right now. I cannot stand it for fantasy football. It drives me insane that he throws a shovel pass,
it's incomplete,
a yard, and he gets a passing touchdown for that in fantasy football. And I know it's the rule, and I know that's what it is, but like it's a running play.
I'll tell you what annoys me
is. It drives me nuts in fantasy.
If it's dropped, it should be a fumble. And instead, it's just an incomplete pass.
Yeah, it's behind the line
on like
scrimmage.
A flip. I hate that.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just when I see that happen, and then they get a passing touchdown for that, a lot of times it feels like when it happens, it swings a fantasy football matchup. It's a small thing, but I would love for that just to be a run play.
Joe George taking Kadarius Toney in the 8th round in his fantasy football game.
I mean, they run so many jet sweeps. I mean, when the quarterback gets it, and he literally just like tosses it as he gets it from the shotgun snap, and that's a completed pass, that's crazy to me. It's a run play.
That's where I'm at. It's a run play, and if they drop it, it's a live ball.
Should be a fumble. If you're dropped behind the line, it should be a fumble.
Yep.
All right, one more segment to go. You know, we lost the Queen of Rock and Roll yesterday. I never got to see Tina Turner in concert. Are there concerts that you wish you had gotten to see, but now you can't even if you wanted to? Get to it next.
You are listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you! You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down!
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, final segment of the show. Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham, Joel Blank, Joe George. Killer Bees. Jeremy is back tomorrow, so don't worry. He will be here to hang out with Joel and you guys tomorrow. But for today, he's calling UH Baseball, and hopefully the Cougs are getting a win somewhere.
I think they already did, didn't they? There you go.
Look at that. They've already won today.
It's good.
That is glorious. So like I said, we lost Tina Turner yesterday. She's 83 years old, the queen of rock and roll. And I never got to see Tina Turner in concert. Now, she wouldn't have been, like, the highest on my list, but I would have gone to see her because if you've ever seen any videos of her concerts, she is 100 miles an hour, all energy, the whole show. She puts on a really good show. But if are there, let's say, three shows that you never got to see of bands that you wish you could see, but now you no longer have the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I think Notorious B.I.G. is one. I think B.I.G. and Tupac are both up there simply because of the fact that I listen to a lot of their music. I've always liked their music and never going to get the chance to see them. But I think you can go back. I mean, as a music kind of a historian, I've seen McCartney, but I've never seen the Beatles. I think the Beatles would have been one where, you know, and even if it's not the kind of Beatles invasion that we saw, like my sisters went to the concerts and did all that stuff. I think that they're one of the great bands of all time that you could put them on the list. And Michael Jackson for sure. Like I never saw Michael Jackson perform at any point in time. And that's definitely a huge disappointment for me because I've seen Prince. I've seen, you know, some of the greats that Stevie Wonder, you know, you can run the gamut of all the different, I used to be a massive concert fan. But I think I regret not seeing a Michael Jackson concert, too.
So I would have loved to have seen Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
I grew up on Led Zeppelin. Obviously, they broke up in 1980, and I was 7 years old. So, I mean, I've seen David Coverdale. I've seen Whitesnake. I saw him when he toured with Jimmy Page, and they did Coverdale Page. But I never got to see I've seen Robert Plant.
Okay.
But I never got to see Led Zeppelin. I would have loved to have seen a Led Zeppelin show.
You got two more.
I would have loved to have seen the real Queen, meaning with Freddie Mercury.
Oh.
Freddie Mercury died in 1991.
Right, yep.
I actually went to my very first concert in January of 1991. I saw ZZ Top and Black Crowes. I was a senior in high school. That was the first show I'd ever gotten to go to. So I never got to see Queen, who I, again, grew up listening to Queen, loved Queen, never got to see him because Freddie died.
Oh.
The only other band that I really wanted to see at the time that I never got to see was Nirvana. I was a huge Nirvana fan, and Kurt Cobain took his own life before I ever got to see them. I've seen Foo Fighters, I've seen Dave Grohl, but I never got to see Nirvana in concert. And I saw pretty much every other big grunge band.
Okay.
I just never got to see Nirvana. I would have loved to have seen Nirvana live.
Joe's on the cover of one of their albums, isn't he?
Yeah, Chasing a Dollar.
Yeah. That's the one in the pool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's fighting for money for that. He's fighting for royalties.
I think so.
I just don't understand that reference. No, I'm just kidding. No, so me, it's easy. I'm going to go Beatles. This one, technically, he's not dead, but he doesn't tour anymore, and he really only plays like one-off shows or Eminem for me. Like, I never got to see it, and I probably never will because, like, he's just so inactive. And also just, like, even if he was active now, it's not the same. Like, it's not the same as, like, he was in, like, the early 2000s. There was no chance in hell my parents were ever going to let me go see that, and, like, I wish I could have. And honestly, even though I know you can change pieces in a band and it's still the same, I never got to see Foo Fighters in full. And, like, I'm hoping to see them at some point, but they just, like, announced their new drummer. And I don't know how much different it actually will be.
Wait, Grohl's still in the band, but he's not drumming?
Yeah, no, he generally plays guitar and sings, even though he can drum.
He does, yeah.
He just usually on stage, he does a lot of
plays. No, but their drummer passed away like a month, two months ago?
Right. Yeah.
So, like, I guess I would put Foo Fighters in there as well for me. And then I think Michael Jackson's easy. But number one's definitely the Beatles. Like, I grew up on the Beatles. Like, I would love, just not my era.
Have you seen McCartney?
No.
So I saw McCartney at Toyota Center, and then I heard him at Minute Maid because I lived in Midtown at the time. And when they had the roof open and they did the big concert. But McCartney still said, Stevie Wonder was unbelievable. Like, you know, I've listened to his music forever, and I didn't know what to expect. And he played for like 3 hours at Toyota Center. And then I heard the backstory afterwards about what kind of a great dude he was. And I was just like, it made you be a bigger fan. He's unbelievable. Like, I think that's one, even if you're not the biggest Motown or R&B type person, but Stevie Wonder's phenomenal.
See, when you can find an artist who sounds almost the same live as they do recorded, to me, that's amazing. It's so
it's
rare.
It's huge. It's huge.
As somebody who was a White Zombie fan, you know, I love Rob Zombie. Rob Zombie doesn't sound anything live like he does when he's recorded. Live, he sounds terrible. Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden is absolutely phenomenal. That guy sounds exactly the same, live and recorded. He's a ball of energy.
You could have said Eric Dickerson, and I still would have believed you.
Iron Maiden is number one of my favorite bands. But they do an incredible show, and he sounds live the same as he does recorded.
I heard Dilly Vanilli does, too.
They do, in fact, although nobody actually uses words.
Ah.
Okay. Does it for us for today. Jeremy's back tomorrow. What do you think the wheelies are leading off with?
What do we have? Football? Anything football today?
I'm sure we can think of something.
They've been pretty consistently starting with Astros lately. I'll roll with it. I've been hot with that. I'm going to stay Astros when the other guys have fought me or gone a different direction. I'll stay Astros.
Joe, you got what do you got for them?
Astros.
All right, well, I'm just going to go, you know, with the Texans because I can't say the same thing. That's no fun. We can't all agree on that. But Joel and Jeremy back tomorrow. I'm back tomorrow night on Late Hits. Willies are next.